based in New York, but got his start as the session pianist for Motown Records in Detroit. We'll hear original hits on which he played, with Martha Reeves and the Vandellas, Marvin Gaye, Stevie Wonder, and Smokey Robinson. At about 3:50, film critic Ed Wiener will discuss two definitely summer films, Crawl and National Lampoon's Vacation. And in about 30 minutes, I'll speak with jazz guitarist Kevin Eubanks, who will be appearing this weekend as part of the third annual Jazz Arts Festival on Sunday at Penn's Landing. Right now, it's a great pleasure to welcome Tracy Nelson, who sang for many years with her group Mother Earth, which started out in Berkeley and later relocated to Nashville, Tennessee. Mother Earth developed followings in both the rock and the country music world, and Tracy Nelson, who no longer uses the Mother Earth title for her bands or recordings, has recorded recently for Flying Fish Records and is in Philadelphia tonight to perform at Philly's, which is located at 2nd and Chestnut Streets in Old City section of Philadelphia. For more information on Tracy Nelson's engagement tonight, you can call Philly's at 925-0446. That's 925-0446. Well, welcome to Fresh Air, Tracy.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to meet you after listening to your Mother Earth recordings for quite a while. You started out in Wisconsin and then went to Berkeley, and now you live in Tennessee. And could you trace your musical roots for us when you were growing up in Wisconsin? What were you listening to? What you liked?
Well, it's kind of come full circle in a way. When I was growing up, I started out listening to folk music and stuff like that. When I took guitar lessons for a while, my teacher got me into listening to the old blues. But when I just sat down and listened for enjoyment, I used to go out in my dad's 1955 salmon and white Chevy convertible and just drive around with the top down and listen to WLAC out of Nashville. And there was a DJ named John R., and they played all black music. It was R&B, B.B. King and Bobby Blue Bland and black gospel. And it was really, you can get WLAC up here. It's no longer that format, but they broadcast practically all over the country. And it was really my first introduction to rhythm and blues, and I just got crazy for it about that time, and then began listening to, in addition to the old blues singers, the R&B singers on Otis Redding and Bobby Bland and Aretha Franklin, Irma Thomas. The Staple Singers would be on their gospel show, and that was the first I'd ever heard them, and that really started me, really being interested in doing that kind of music and singing seriously too, I think.
And then how did you start singing? Was it a matter of being at home around the piano and just doing it with yourself?
Well, my family's all pretty musical, and we really, it sounds kind of idyllic, but when I was little, we used to sit around evenings after dinner and sing, and, we had a quartet. My dad honestly sang bass. my brother was tenor, I was an alto, my mother was a soprano, and we would, we're into four-part singing, and then I started playing piano and then guitar, and really it was just kind of a natural thing, and I always loved singing, and at a certain point that was really my primary source of enjoyment and then income.
Did you go to Berkeley with the intention of becoming a rock and roll star?
No. I loved playing and singing so much that I knew several people who were, professionally in the music business and rock and roll musicians. And from what I saw of it, it didn't look very attractive to me as a business. And I was also pretty puristic about it, and I didn't want to prostitute my art and blah, blah. And I was just determined to do it for enjoyment. I moved to California because I was pretty bored with Wisconsin, and then once I got there and saw the people who were, playing and being seriously listened to, I was so challenged that I decided to try it myself. But I really didn't have any firm resolve, at least consciously, when I moved out there do that.
What was your sense of what would be compromised in rock? What bothered you about that?
Well, simply that you were dealing with a business as opposed to an art, that would necessarily require you to make certain changes and modifications in what you did. I believed then, and maybe I still do now, it doesn't seem quite as important, that art was art and business was business, and there was no way that business would accept art on its own terms. Now, we're talking about rock and roll here, so it is a little pretentious, but that's what I thought at the time.
What are your memories of living around California at that time? Because that was sort of the place for rock, and it still is to some degree.
I suppose.
But how do you remember the lifestyle at that point? Are there things that strike you as especially ludicrous or things that you miss?
Ludicrous would probably be the operative word. Yeah, it was real strange out there, and when coming from Wisconsin, I mean, I consider myself a pretty hip person, not because I came from Wisconsin, but I mean, when I lived there, I thought I was real liberal and hip and, you know, an early hippie and did all the things the early hippies did. But when I got to California, I just felt like I was fresh off the farm. I mean, it was crazy. It was ludicrous. I mean, people wore outlandish costumes and they took far too many drugs and had this bizarre concept of life and what was important and what wasn't important. I mean, it was bizarre to me. Totally alien. I mean, I'm a product of the work ethic, and I've always had a job, and I couldn't imagine going on a corner and asking people for their money. I didn't really enjoy... I took drugs, but I didn't... You know, I wasn't committed to it, and I never enjoyed acid. I just thought it was boring. And, you know, I didn't have much in common with those people and really didn't fall into the culture.
Did you feel comfortable acknowledging the difference?
Oh, my. No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm sure I did. And I'm sure I was pretty defensive about it at the time. I mean, I was into it enough to do it. And I'm sure there was a lot of conflict. I don't know. I can't specifically say whether I ever said, no, this is a bunch of craziness. And I hope I did. I just couldn't tell you.
How did Mother Earth form?
Haphazardly. Steve Miller was an old friend of mine from Wisconsin. And he knew I was interested in putting some musicians together. And he introduced me to a couple people, Paul St. John and Ira Kamen, who were trying to form a group, and the three of us got together. I remember initially they said they didn't want to work with a chick singer, but I changed their mind.
Really? Was that really an issue?
Oh, it was interesting. When I first got there, one of the first people I met was Bill Graham, who's an absolutely impressive, incredible man who really was the music scene there. And we shared an interest in rhythm and blues and so on, and he kind of appreciated that, I think. And he introduced me to the managers of several of the working bands out there. And I talked to all of them, and every one of them said, the guys refused to work with a woman.
Well, how about Janis Joplin and Grace Lee?
Well, I think that's why.
Role model. Uh-huh.
They knew enough about, you know, some of the problems that I mean, they're just necessary conflicts when you have one woman and a group of men working together. And they just, you know, they were doing okay without adding to their problems, and they just weren't interested. So I ran into that all the time. But like I say, I was able to change their minds. And then we just in one fell swoop got Doug Somm's entire rhythm section because he was making one of his treks back to Texas, and we had a group.
Well, let's listen to a Mother Earth recording. This is a cover recording of a Motown song, Take Me in Your Arms, Rock Me a Little While, a Holland Dozier, a Holland song. Were there many groups doing Motown covers at that point? I don't think there were.
There really were none, and that was another strange thing about our being there. I mean, there was that style of music, and we were doing R&B, so...
Anything you'd like to say about the session before we hear it?
This particular one?
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because we did an entire tour with the Doobie Brothers opening for us, and they after this had a big hit on this tune, and I believe there was some connection there. I've never asked them really, but you know, this was just an obscure song on an obscure album, and that was one of their first big hits.
Well, let's hear it.
Please let me feel your embrace. little while. Hold me, darling, rock me a little while. We all must feel heartache sometimes. Right now, I'm feeling mine. I never, never see your smiling face no more. I never, never hear your knock upon my door.
That's Mother Earth from their recording Satisfied, featuring Tracy Nelson, who is singing. And Tracy Nelson is my guest right now in Fresh Air. She'll be appearing tonight at Philly's at 2nd and Chestnut, and their phone number is 925-0446. Well, I think that record really swings, especially for a rock band in the 60s. It just has a different type of swing than you'd get out of a rock band. And you recorded it in Nashville, which is sort of unusual for a Motown cover.
Well, I've always done everything kind of strange. I think it's because I'm left-handed. It just... everything I do is kind of peculiar, but that was the whole thing. I mean, of our coming through the 60s, I always did this style of music, and I still do to a large degree. I've tried to personalize it a little bit, and it just wasn't happening in the 60s. I mean, you know, the black people were doing R&B, and there was R&B on the charts, but as far as what was really happening in the pop scene, it was totally alien to everyone. It was alien to people in San Francisco. It was alien to people in Nashville, and it was alien, obviously, to the record labels. They didn't know what to do with it.
What did the people in Nashville, like in the recording studios or just your neighbors or whatever, think of you? I'm sure they had the idea that you were a rock musician, and that brought a whole lot of stereotypical baggage with it.
Well, you know, I don't know why, but that wasn't the case, and that's why I ended up in Nashville. We ended up a tour there, and we did a record there, and I just liked the people so much, and I found them so accepting of everything, really, and I mean, we were a mixed band racially, and I think it's because I immediately, when I moved there, lived in the, you know, I rented a farm for a while and I bought a farm, and I've always lived in the country, and people in the country are a lot less frightened than people in the cities, and certainly people in Nashville were a lot less threatened by hippies than people where there were a lot of hippies. I mean, there just weren't any. They found us curious, and then they got to know us, and then they began inviting us to their churches. And you know, it was really quite extraordinary, and that's what I liked about the place. And the people in the music business also were just so friendly and so open, and there was no attitudes, and, you know, I've always been treated with a great deal of respect in Nashville.
Did you see Robert Altman's film?
Yeah.
Nashville? What did you think of that?
Well, I thought it was an interesting film, but I didn't think it had anything to do with Nashville, but I don't think he intended it to.
It had a very seamy view of Nashville. It was a sleazy type of music biz as portrayed in the film.
Yeah, it really was more like, it was like L.A. In fact, people in Nashville after that movie said, I think we'll put a bunch of people from Nashville in a movie about L.A. and call it L.A. I mean, it was just, it was his concept of the music business in general and some real, real obvious stereotypes, but it really wasn't particularly suggestive of, I mean, Nashville has its own quirks, but he didn't manage to find any of them.
Did you perform, or have you performed in the Grand Ole Opry or the other country music places and venues in Nashville?
Yeah, I sang with Earl Scruggs on the Old Opry one time, which is just one of the big thrills of my life. The funny thing about it was that this was probably in about 1972 or 73, and Earl's wife got about 15 calls the next day from various members of the Opry Association. I did a song called Banks of the Ohio, which I sing very well. I've done it since my old folk music days and was received very well. The Opry Association were very nervous and upset because I wasn't wearing a bra, and that was their only comment on the whole thing. I never performed on the Opry again.
How about other country venues? Do you like performing in that type of context amongst your neighbors?
Well, I really don't, so I couldn't say. I mean, you know, in fact, my neighbors and I sit around sometimes and play and sing, but as far as I don't really do any kind of country clubs.
What's your preference for the amount of performing and recording that you'd like to do if you are the one to make, you know, to have control over that?
You mean as far as how much time I put into
it? How much time you'd like to put, you know, how much you'd like to be away from home or not, how much time you'd like to be in a studio?
I'd like to be away from home as much as I'm home. I mean, that's a perfect balance to me. It usually doesn't work out that way. And I used to not like recording at all. I now would love to be doing more recording. And two albums a year is what they always used to expect out of us, and I found that impossible. But one every 8 or 9 months, it's kind of like a pregnancy, I guess,
yeah.
is sufficient.
I imagine, we all get older, and as you get older, you start reevaluating things that you thought about before. Like, you know, especially if you're in the type of business where you're a visible person and you are part of a generation that's growing up. And I'm wondering how you see your own growing up as far as any changes in your lifestyle that you might not have anticipated before, or just insights into life. I guess part of it you might have already done when you left California. That might have been a significant change for you. But how do you see growing older and being in a music which is still youth-oriented? I guess that's the main thing.
Well, I think as far as being in a music that is still youth-oriented, that's a subject that would take forever to get into. It's something I really haven't quite figured out yet. But strangely enough, I think that as I get older, I'm a lot looser, and I protect myself a lot less. And my moving to Nashville was really more of an escape than it was anything else. I didn't like California, and I wanted some peace and quiet, and now I find I need that less. I'm wanting to go out on the road a lot more. I could conceivably move away from Nashville if I could find as pleasant an environment somewhere else. I mean, I really spent a good bit of time just kind of insulating myself when I moved there, and I'm doing that less now, and I think that's sort of a turnaround from the way it usually works.
I think city folk have the idea that it's healthier to live in the country. Do you think that's true?
Well, it's better for your physical health, and it's better for your mental health to some degree, but you get very little input. So, and that's, you really have to balance it, and that's what I've been trying to do.
Well, tonight you'll be playing at Philly's at 2nd and Chestnut, and could you describe what type of material you're doing these days, how it's different or not from what people might know from your Mother Earth performance?
Well, we do some traditional blues and some R&B covers and some original stuff. There won't be any country music. Well, that's hard for me to say because I do things that don't strike me as country at all, and other people hear them as country.
Like what?
Well, some of the ballads I do, and several songs that I've done, even Come See About Me, I've had people say, you know, it sounded country. So it is to the hearer whatever they hear.
Will you be performing Down So Low? I'm sure that's always requested.
Yes. Yes, I will. Possibly even twice if it goes according to the norm.
Do you get tired of doing that?
I don't, and I don't know why or how. There certainly is no other song that I've done for that long. Part of it is just the input. I mean, people love it so much, or seem to, that it's hard not to be gratified enough by that to want to keep doing it. But it just has worn well.
And you can't just keep digging in. Do you have that sense of having a genuine responsive chord when you play the song?
More than ever now.
Well, it's been real interesting speaking with you. And
thank you.
Thanks for coming here this afternoon. And we're about to hear a song from the title song, Come See About Me, from a recent, it's a 1980 recording, but on Flying Fish. and the most recent Tracy Nelson recording. And again, Tracy Nelson will be appearing tonight at Philly's, which is at 2nd and Chestnut, and their phone number is 925-0446. Well, before we hear this, anything you'd like to say about this session?
About this? Well, in fact, I think it wasn't released till late 81. It was a lengthy process. But, no, I really like this album. It's all R&B covers. We did that deliberately. It's not particularly representative of everything I do, but it's a nice record.
Well, I liked it, and let's hear it, and thanks again for being here.
Thank you.
Tracy Nelson from her Flying Fish recording, Come See About Me, and that was the title tune. And again, Tracy Nelson will be appearing tonight at Philly's at 2nd and Chestnut, and their number is 925-0446. Well, it's 3:30, and you're listening to Fresh Air on WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. My name's Danny Miller. I'm sitting in this week and next week for Terry Gross. At 4 o'clock today, I'll speak with Bob Nellums, who was the session pianist for a number of Motown sessions and recordings with people like Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, Martha Reeves.